Okay, chapter 5. What does a Christian school parent look like? And I think my original document said, what does a Christian parent look like? I decided we're talking about a Christian school parent. In other words, we're focusing on those that come to the school. It won't be possible, or neither is it the intent of this chapter, to describe the parenting process. There's so many good books on the market, and that's the focus. James Dobson and so many others. And I think there's a plethora of really good information on the market. And we live in one of the most fortunate generations in that respect, because never has there been a generation that has had more information at their fingertips than ours. And yet never has there been a generation that flounders as badly as ours does. And so what we're going to do is to try to profile a Christian school parent, those that come to the Christian school and want to be part of the school family for one of many reasons. And we're going to discuss some of these reasons, and possibly the best reason and one that we would hope would be the reason. And I might say also an introduction that it doesn't really matter particularly the reason that a parent comes, because most of us don't really understand the true reason. We grow into the true reason, and I think we need to give all people, and just as we intend to give our students room to grow, so we need to give our parents room to grow in, and believe that as they look in retrospect a year or two down the road as to why they came to the school, they have some better reasons, and they see some results being built into the lives of their kids that things that they never even thought of. I would say one of the things that I notice is a reason is to compensate for an inadequate home. They have this nagging feeling that the home is not what it should be, and they want to make up for it somehow. They just have this yearning to be what God wants them to be as a Christian home. And they know they're not meeting the standard. It might be the husband is not a believer. It may be that the husband is absent a lot because of his job. And so it's kind of an attempt to make up for that lack, that male figure, the authority, the person that should be the spiritual leader, should be providing the nourishment and the guidance for the home. He's not there. And the hope is that maybe I can buy that service somehow, and I'm going to provide that for my children. And in some cases, it's the wife that is maybe the weak or the missing one, but that doesn't seem to be as often the case. Often it's just a single parent. It's not just that the husband is gone away working, just not there, and more and more single parents in our society. And these are people that really have a need, and are almost desperate in their need, especially if they try to raise their sons. And he gets to be 8 and 9 and 12 and 14, and they're just overwhelmed with what it means to be working full-time and somehow providing for these young kids in their homes, and especially the boys. How are they going to possibly do that? And they come with almost desperation on their faces as they present themselves and their families to the school. Sometimes they really sense that even though the father and the mother are there, there's no spiritual depth in the home at all. Maybe they've even, for one reason or another, stopped going to church. And they know that's not right. And they feel the church never hurt anybody, the Christian background never hurt anybody, and this may be a non-Christian family, but enough in touch with some Christianity in their background that they feel that they want this. They don't want to raise their kids in a vacuum. And so, because there is just basically nothing going on at home, they have chosen the Christian school. And some realize they've really blown it as parents. They've made some real serious mistakes, and they want to compensate for that. Some realize that they entered a marriage and maybe the first one or two children with a very irresponsible lifestyle, drinking, maybe on drugs themselves, maybe going from job to job, really abusing their children in several ways, And as they kind of take stock of where they are as a family, they're headed nowhere real fast, and they're concerned. And so they want to somehow play catch-up, if it's possible. And they're beginning to see behavior traits in their children that alarm them. And before it gets any worse, they want to do something about the situation. And so there's that group of parents that somehow want to compensate for this great lack that they see. And if someone was to evaluate their home on any kind of a basis, they would just fear they would come out way too low on the scale. And they're maybe a little bit ashamed about that, and they want to correct that if possible. There's another group of parents that see poor performance on the part of their children. It's not so much looking at the home that bothers them, but it's looking at the way their kids individually have turned out. And often these people have not really in any way honestly looked at their homes, and they don't see where their homes have failed. Okay. Poor performance. And this performance may be in the behavioral area where the kid is running with the wrong crowd, he's starting to be rebellious, talk back to his parents, the mother is feeling a little bit anxious about where this growing son is going, and if it goes on much longer, she's not going to be able to handle him. Or it may be academic, he's just floundering worse and worse, he's getting further behind, he's not doing his work, and it just seems that he's not going to be able to compete in society at all. I mean, college is not out of the question. He's probably not even going to finish high school. And parents get concerned. One phrase that I find characteristic of this family, that Bobby needs this, but Susie doesn't. In other words, they have children that are performing acceptably. But there's this one child that is their problem. So Bobby needs this. And of course, as we see what we have to offer, what in Christian education, an entire philosophy, Susie needs this as bad as Bobby does. So when a parent has identified their need for a Christian school on the basis of poor performance, we realize that it's not really a valid reason, but it's still a presenting reason. This is why they are presenting themselves, and we accept them on that basis. But we still have a long ways to go with a parent like this. And the main reason is that they don't see the part, the role that they have played in Bobby's background to bring him to the place where he is. And it's not that we always want parents to feel guilty or to feel the blame, but the fact of the matter is the inference is, I'm paying you to fix my child. I have one child, doesn't need fixing, but I have Bobby, and he needs fixing. Please fix him. And, of course, the inference is that the home doesn't need fixing, the marriage doesn't need fixing, and as we've said earlier in this book, and I'll repeat it again here, the child's main context that he arrives to us in is the context of his home. And that's why we enroll families, not students at Cookingland Academy. And so we want to work with the family, and we want families who are open enough to see that possibly they are going to learn something. And if you were to bring it up, they would probably be quite defensive at first, because Susie's turned out right. So that certainly is justification for something, and it can be, and of course it would take quite a bit of investigation to get to the bottom of the problem. But the fact of the matter is, we would like to believe that as a result of being associated with Cookingland Academy, the entire home is strengthened and benefits, not just the student. And so we don't want to work with that child out of the context of the home. It's within the context of the home. And so we try to let the parent know from the very first interview that they will be a very important part of the process, that we will be in constant consultation with them. We will be constantly reporting back to them on the progress, and this dialogue is going to be ongoing probably more than they care for, because they would like to just give us Bobby for a year or two, have us fix him and then give him back, and we don't do that. And I don't think it's the responsibility of Christian education to even give the parents the illusion that they can somehow absolve themselves of the responsibility of being intricately involved in the training process of that child. Even if it's over the hard and rocky road, they are a very important part. Another reason that we see people bringing their children to our school is that it's the lesser evil of all the available options. They don't like the public schools. They basically they're kind of sour on society. Nobody's really doing it right, and we don't really like your school either. You're not our brand of Christian, or we wish you weren't Christian. We wish you could be just kind of a secular private school. Somehow we're not really good enough for them, and they kind of let us know that this is not really what they're looking for. But what they're looking for isn't available, and so they've come to us. That's kind of a hard person to make happy. But the fact of the matter is, their child is precious, and their child is probably a hurting child. The parents are critical. The parents are bitter. Sometimes they're apathetic. They sound like they're interested, and they have lots to say. There's just this constant stream of language coming out at the first interview, and you get the impression that, oh, these parents are really into this. But you let the kid get enrolled, and they're gone. They're really not that concerned. They're bitter people. They don't have friends, and they don't know how to maintain relationships at all. And they realize, maybe subconsciously, that things aren't turning out right for their child. And where the child was, things were going bad. And so they're just trying something else. And they're unhappy people. You might not be able to make these people happy, because they will tend to blame the school and the teacher for anything that goes wrong. In fact, they're almost looking for somebody to blame. If they hadn't tried the Christian school, then the gossip in the neighborhood might be, look at how bad their kid is going, and they're horrible parents. They're indulging the kid. They're letting the kid do whatever he wants to do, and things are going from bad to worse. But if they can say, well, we tried the Christian school, and even that didn't help, so there, so to speak. So in other words, they just want one more defense mechanism to shore up the position that they have done a good job. They have done their best, but with this kid, you couldn't do anything. That's the point they're trying to make. And like I say, a lot of times this is subconscious, but basically speaking, they're trying to somehow justify the failure that they see coming, and somehow they're going to have to give an account to somebody for the fact that the kid did not turn out right. And so they come to you trying to get one more option cleared out of the way, and they really don't have an expectation of success. They're more or less convinced that the failure is going to come. Their idea of success probably is happiness, progress, a kind of report on the child that they've never gotten before, that the child's doing beautifully, that standardized tests even show that compared to other students he is doing just, you know, a superb job, and they would be shocked. But these are unhappy people. Basically, they're unhappy people, and so they're kind of braced for bad news, and they expect it to come. And they like to hear a little bit of good news. It's a relief, but they know it's going to be short-lived. And there's a lot of parents in this category. It's hard to work with their child, because this kind of a parent is such a poor parent that they have not established a positive relationship with a child, and they don't know how to nurture that relationship at all. So the child is really floundering in a quagmire worse than some of these other situations that we've already described. And then we do have the parent that comes to us that really, this person has goals for their family. They have usually a high level of expectation. They may or may not be a church family, They want their kid to get into a good college, and they see what the standardized test results are in public school. They hear some of the stories of what's going on there, and they see clearly that X Christian school down the road is their best option. And so they come here, and they're usually quite motivated and quite supportive. And it's kind of fun to work with these parents. Sometimes they don't know anything about the Christian philosophy of education, but they want the best for their child, and usually they're there for their child. And usually we find that initially there's a lot of resistance to the spiritual aspect of the school there. They want to see the religious curriculum. You know, what are you going to teach my child? And so you lay that all out. Oh, well, their attitude is that can't really hurt them. Sounds pretty good, pretty benign stuff. And the inference that they give in the interview to Johnny, well, Johnny, this might be new for you, and, you know, we don't care, you know, just how you do in that area, you know, just kind of stomach it. It won't hurt you, but we want you to get some A's now in math now and some A's in science and some of these other courses, and so we're right there to say it. And by the way, did you know our school has a policy? Your child can't flunk Bible. You can't flunk it. Well, what do you mean you can't flunk it? Well, by that we mean this is a very important subject. This is one of the reasons this school has been established. And we don't really know where this subject will end up on your priority list, but we're telling you up front that it has top priority with us. And so you can't opt to flunk Bible. You have to do the assignments and you must pass it to remain in this school. Oh. And that always is a double take, and they realize, well, I guess we can handle that. That's just kind of the taste of the medicine is kind of bad, but we can swallow hard. But then moving on to what we might call the best reason for putting a child in a Christian school. And as we said earlier, this might be a growing awareness in the life of any of these parents that we have described already, and there are others than those that we have described. These are just some of the major categories. But that is the parent that, and I'm reminded of a verse out of this song, "Am I a Soldier of the Cross?" We'll have to look that up. It's just a wonderful old-time hymn. And it says, "Is this vile world a friend of grace to lead me on to God?" And of course, it's a rhetorical question, because basically the author is saying, you know, one thing I have come to realize is that this world is an enemy to grace. This is the kingdom of darkness. This is Satan's domain. And I have come to realize that I am asked to raise my children in a totally lost and darkened society. And so basically, what is needed, this parent says, is something radically different from what I see all around me. This is the parent that comes with conviction that you are not only pouring knowledge into my child's head, you are shaping his mind. You are messing with the way he thinks. His fundamental approach to life, the perspective with which he will view every subject you're going to teach him, his point of view. And I cannot, absolutely cannot trust that to a humanistic or to a pagan society to shape my child. Now, if it was just knowledge, if it was just opening up an encyclopedia and shaking out the knowledge into the child's head in some kind of an antiseptic, sterile situation, if that were possible, that might be one thing, but the fact of the matter is we all come in the context of these world views, of these perspectives, and so consequently we are shaping a life, the way the child is going to think. Now, Jesus had some rather startling things to say. He says, "A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. He is like the sea that's driven by the wind and tossed." There is a tremendous amount of instability in a double-minded man. And what our Christian culture, our Christian subculture, is trying to do is to make such an accommodation with the world that you can have my child for 5 days to mess with his mind and to sink down your track humanistically and come up with your answers and your perspective and your point of view, and then on Sundays give him to me for an hour and I will teach him this other track, and then somehow he is supposed to revolve these total incongruities in his mind, and there's hardly any similarities there at all, and he is supposed to be able to resolve that. We are raising a generation of children that are totally unstable, and that's one way we could define our society today. Look at the violence, look at the rebellion, look at the problems that we are creating for ourselves as a society. Have you ever thought of this, that the major problems that beset us as a society are the problems that we create as a society? They're our own problems. And as we turn our back upon God, and even as the church deliberately makes choices to train its children unchristianly with a pagan mindset, and then somehow hope that they are going to be able to track right. And of course, there's always the illustration of well, so-and-so turned out all right. He went to public school and turned out fine. Yes, there's an exception. You know, there's kids that actually survive abortion. You know, and I think of a child. We talk about abortion as putting a baby that should be in a very secure and nurturing place in mortal danger and destroying him. So the public educational system is a place where the very Christian that is against abortion is all for the abortion of their 10 and 12 and 14-year-old. They put them in mortal danger of literally destroying them in a very hostile environment that is dead set to destroy their faith and to make them unchristian and unbelieving in their total mindset. And that's what they're dedicated to. Now, the fact that some kids can survive that, it's a miracle, and it does happen. Many kids do survive that. But if you just look at the statistics of abortion alone, I think there's an interesting parallel here. I am told that about 20%, between 10 and 20% of aborted babies actually survive the process and have to be killed or left to die by themselves. So the fact, I mean, abortion is an ugly, heinous act, and it's possible to survive it. Well, it's possible to survive public school too. This is a parent that understands that clearly, and that says, no, you cannot have my child. And you will not shape his mind. And you will not destroy his faith. And just as I make no apology for the roof that I put over his head and the shelter of the four walls that I provide for him to grow in, so I make no apology for the shelter that I intend to give him as his mind is shaping and developing, the shelter of a godly education with instruction that's founded on the Word of God that will teach him to see life as God sees it. He says, as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my thoughts, and my ways than your ways. And so this parent is identified as one who supports the school. It supports the staff. This, when the story comes home from the kid and the teacher did this or they said this or da da da, and he's got his lower lip sticking out, the parent's first reaction is to defend that school, is to say, no, we've checked the school out, and, you know, in lieu of the fact that I haven't heard your teacher's story, I believe that your teacher is making the best decision until I can go back to school and get this story straight. We have a supportive parent, and what a difference that makes, a parent that will believe what the school is doing on behalf of their child. This is a parent who gives extra money, extra time. This is a parent who supports the school because this school must survive. This school has got to be there for their kid. They're doing more than buying an education for their child. They are ensuring the fact that their community will have this option in the future for them and their friends. And so they're willing to put out that extra effort to make sure this school survives. And they know that's going to take more than the tuition payment alone, and it does. Most Christian schools will admit right up front that this is a bare bones price, and it's going to take more than this to make this operation survive. And these are the parents that understand that clearly, and they're willing to make that additional sacrifice. I think that every parent has a right to ask this question, and I think this being in print in a book might really help. I think one thing that only one Christian parent has ever asked me in the 21 years of this school is to give a success story, give something that I can point to that shows what this school is all about, a reference that they can check up on. When I get an employee, somebody wanting a job, they give me references. I check on the employee. I think a parent has every right to check on the school. Now, it's true that many of the parents know about our school, know from neighbors, and that they're pretty satisfied with our track record. But I believe that parents that are new in the community, parents that move in, should go to the school and say, I want you to give me a family that you feel comfortable with, that has been with you, that you have made a difference in their life. Give me their phone number. I'd like to call them and talk to them about this school. Would you do that? I think any bona fide Christian school should have many of those families that they could say, well, your kid's going to be in the sixth grade. Let me give you a name of a family in the sixth grade. I think you should be able to do that. And just rap with one of the parents about what have they been happy with the school about? What do they think the school lacks or needs? What would they like to change about the school if they could? And that's a wonderful way for them to really get a feel for where you are as a school. Because I think I must say at this juncture that I cannot unequivocally recommend any Christian school in any situation. Because I know that there are some Christian schools that actually have the net effect of driving children from God because they are operated so legalistically and so far removed from grace and love that these Christian schools actually have a tremendous capacity to do damage in the life of a child and of a family. And I hate to have to say that, I wish it weren't so, but some people have started Christian schools for the wrong reason. Some have done it as a reaction to maybe it was desegregation in the South. Some schools were started because they didn't believe in that. Some started it just as a reaction to evolution that was taught in the school, and they didn't want their kid to hear about evolution, or a reaction to sex education that was started in the school. But our school should not exist for a negative reactionary reason. It should exist as a proactive reason. We have a mandate from the Lord to train our children in the fear and admonition of the Lord, in the way that they should go. And so we have a positive reason. Even if there were no public schools, even if there was nothing to be against, we should still be here. A Christian school is valid. It is a valid option. This kind of family supports the student in a healthy fashion. It doesn't always rescue the child. I think of so much damage parents can do in rescuing their children. And I would like to just have a little paragraph here that compares what I call defending and protecting a child. And I think sometimes as parents we get this confused in our thinking. I think a parent has every right in the world to protect their child. That's not only an instinct we have. We don't want to see them come to harm. We don't want to see them come to danger. And we should protect our child. And not only from physical harm, from any kind of abuse that would damage their child. Parent has an obligation to protect their child. But to defend the child, I think is a different issue, because basically speaking, you are teaching the child that you are always going to swoop into his defense and to make his side of the argument, make excuses for him, justify whatever failure, whatever lack, whatever has come in the way there, and the child comes to expect that. And a weakness and a lack of character comes as a result of a parent who is always bailing the child out, who is always defending the kid. And I have seen kids grow and remarkable progress when parents tell their children, go and face the music. You talk to the teacher. That's an issue between you and the teacher, and you can handle that. I have confidence. I've talked to your teacher. I have no reason to believe that your teacher has anything against you or is out to get you. I have every reason to believe that they're fair, honest, open, loving, kind. You go talk to that teacher. I know you don't feel like doing it, and I know that you're at a low point in your relationship with your teacher, but me stepping in here right now is not the right thing to do. That's the wrong thing. If your relationship is to be healed, then you too have to work on it. You have to go to your teacher and get that straight. And where parents are willing to do that, absolutely remarkable things, tremendous growth takes place. And those aren't easy things to do. And sometimes parents think, well, I have to protect my child from that kind of pain. But you see, no, we protect them from abuse. Now hopefully your teacher isn't abusing your child. You have a right to know that. And maybe on your own you can affirm for yourself that that is not taking the place, and maybe check with the administration to ensure that. But once you're sure that there's no abuse, but this is part of the pain of growth, then it is true that no pain, no gain. And your child is not going to develop any character in his life at all without pain. It is hard. The hard things of life, and don't rescue your children from the hardness of school. The Bible even says, endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. And somehow, Christian parents rush in to protect their children from hardness, from hardships, and they will never develop character. And that child is always weak, is always dependent, and the parents seem to never be able to explain that weakness of character that they complain about until they're 20 and 30 years old. It's because they never allowed their children to reap the consequences of their choices, is to realize that there is a cause and effect built in this universe that God has used as a major teaching tool. And whatever a parent steps in to interrupt that cause and effect relationship, they stop a major teaching tool that God has designed to teach that child the facts of life. And when we interrupt that process, our children will suffer every time. This kind of a parent builds responsibility in the child. This kind of a parent expects the child to be accountable for his homework, for the relationships he develops at school, for his assignments, for the responsibilities that are asked of him at school, that he will develop that. And this kind of a parent trusts that God is going to bless their child. And even those areas where there is normal parental anxiety, and you wonder if your Billy or whoever is going to turn out all right, this is a parent who eminently says, to the best of my ability, I am making the best choices I can for my child. I am being the best parent I know how to be. I'm providing the best education I know how to provide. I will trust God that in a given situation where it's a little bit shaky, I may need some consultation with the teacher, one thing and another, but I must believe that God cares intimately. We'll have to choose the right word there. He cares passionately for my child, and he is not going to let him go. And right now in this situation, God is going to work it out. And things are going to get turned around. My child is going to get back. Because I've consulted with the staff, I've consulted with the administration on a course of action. I believe it is godly, and even though my child seems to be suffering right now, I proceed trusting God that I am doing the best thing I know how to do. And very often, that's hard to do, because it gets at that point where the evidence that you want to see, that turnaround, that progress that we are so desperate to see in our child, when it's not there when we want to see it, that's when we tend to pull back. That's when we say, well, I guess I made a mistake here. I guess this school isn't the right answer. I guess your teacher isn't the right one for you. I guess in this case, and we start to backtrack. We start to look back over our shoulder. The Bible says, no man having put his hand to the plow and having looked back is fit for the kingdom of God. And yet parents are guilty of giving up way before students are, invariably. Parents who take their kids out of school because somewhere along the line they've gotten unhappy, they've given up before the kid has. They're fed up with the phone calls, with the responsibility that the school is putting on the parent, and the follow-up process, the accountability process. And the parents just, they cave in. They don't want that. That's not what they had in mind when they came to the school. They hadn't come in mind for somebody to make them accountable for what was going on in the home. And so they bail out. And it's a sad thing. This is a parent, of course, who is not trusting, doesn't believe that God is doing anything in that situation. It's very sad to see that happen. Another characteristic of a Christian school parent that is the profile we're looking for is one who maintains healthy personal relationships, healthy family relationships. This parent, to the best of their ability, will have a strong home and family. They will be concerned about the marriage. They will be concerned about the relationship with the children. They will be developing that relationship. They'll believe that somehow their children are worthy of a relationship, that they're actually fun to get to know and fun to be with. How many families have you come across where they just don't like to spend time with each other? They don't enjoy each other. They're drifting further and further apart. Boy, they need to get a handle on that. That's a symptom of some serious problems within the home. And a symptom or a characteristic of a strong Christian home is that those relationships are good. They have good friends and they have a church that is supporting them and that they are supporting, where they're being nurtured and where they grow. And that will be the characteristic of a good Christian home. And then finally, I would say that a characteristic of a good Christian parent is that they are personally growing spiritually and that they're open to instruction. This is a parent that comes in and you really feel that as a teacher, as you have a conference with this parent, that this parent is really truly open to what you have to say. Just as I hope that my staff is open. And as you have a problem with Johnny and he's gotten to a plateau, or actually it seems like he's sliding back downhill, and you want to address that problem, you have a conference, a consultation, as you talk about that. You're open to what the parent has to say, and hopefully this Christian parent, the one that we're profiling here, is one that is open. They're listening to what you have to say, and they appreciate the insight that you give them on their child, because you see them in the context of his peers. You see them in the context of carrying out his assignments and his responsibilities. And you're relaying this information to the parent. And how open to that information is the parent? Are they defensive? They're saying, well, you should let him sit over here, or you should be doing this, or you should be doing that, or you should be doing, you know, and that kind of a parent. And even, well, the teacher should be open to that too. But if the parent will not hear what is trying to be said, being told to them, then we have a problem. And the problem is that you have a parent that isn't fully availing themselves of what they're paying for. And what they're paying for is a partner in the process of raising and training their child. And when you're arguing with your partner the whole time, you're not getting very much use out of that partnership when you see that as somehow a combative relationship rather than a parallel, a joining hands together. So it's really important that they see that this is a partnership, that the teacher wants to go with your child in the same direction and has the same destination in mind as you do as a parent. What a joy it is to work in that kind of a partnership. And so this kind of a parent sees that clearly, that teacher is my friend. They're the other half of this equation. And we're going in the same direction. We have the same goals for my child. And this teacher is investing his life, his energy, his talents, the gifts that God has given to him, into my child. I am fortunate to have my child in his class, or in her class. If this parent can have this attitude, this is an open parent who is growing. And there will be some things that will be hard for both of them. And if we're all in a growing relationship, we realize that really the major part of the equation is God himself. And as we see God working, we're open and we pray for God to give us a solution. Sometimes neither the parent nor the teacher has the answer. And we pray together that God will make it evident. What is it that's going to motivate the child? What is it that is really the root of the problem? What is it that's blocking the learning process? Lord, reveal it to us so that we can help Johnny over this hump and move on in his life. And if you can form that kind of relationship, you have the picture of a Christian school parent. That's what he looks like. He looks like someone who has found a friend in the raising of children, a partner, someone to join hands with. And parents who are overwhelmed in our society today with raising children and don't consider Christian education as an option are missing one of the greatest opportunities that God has put at their disposal. And I run into these kind of people all the time in the grocery store line. Christian families, deacons, elders, they're telling you this long drawn out story of what's happening. Kid has run away from home. This has happened. That has happened. They don't understand. And I feel like, boy, could I? Once this book is read, I can just hand them the book. But I mean, you don't want to stand right there in the grocery line and all you can do is sympathize and be like, wow, boy, that's tough. Man, I didn't realize that you had that kind of a pain going on in your life. I'll be praying for you. That's terrible. And that's as far as you can go. But what I'm thinking is, that's what we're here for. What we're here for is that extra $300 a month in the bank that you are using for something else, is it worth it to you? How much is the free public school education costing you? How much is it really costing your kid? Are we losing a life? Is there an eternal destiny at stake here that's not worth $300 a month or whatever the tuition rate is? So consequently, I think that a Christian school parent is somebody who really understands what's at stake. And like I say, it's possible to do it without a Christian school. But increasingly in our society, as it plunges into this social madness, I think as long as God makes Christian schools an option, that the Christian community needs to support it. And we must do everything in our power to make sure it survives. But you see, what I'm saying is, they do look like all of those things above. All of these poor reasons. You see, if I only accepted this parent, mm-hmm. I would only have 20% of my Christian school enrollment. This is the profile that that best reflects on what a Christian parent ought to be, you know, because hopefully Christian parents will be picking this up. They might see themselves up here and be encouraged, hopefully. I mean, we will write it in not a judgmental way, but an encouraging way that will lead them, oh boy, there's a lot more. And maybe one of the reasons I'm not experiencing success is that I'm one of these parents. I see it very clearly. See, I want this chapter to say in such a way, just as I said in chapter 1, what is a Christian school going to look like? It's going to look as different as the administrators and the staffs and the communities all over, okay? I'm saying the same about a Christian school parent. We have all kinds of, and they're here for all many different kinds of reasons. But I think that the reason that is most justified and is most, that these people are actually on the journey to become, no, Christian schools aren't perfect. We don't have perfect administrators or teachers. We also don't have perfect parents. I mean, that's part of the process we're struggling with. But this is the direction we're heading. We need to grow. So somehow in this chapter, I would like to get across the concept that we have every kind of parent that you can possibly imagine. But this is the direction we would like to take them as parents. It helps parents to see a little bit what it's all about, and from their perspective, what their attitude, their whole mindset has to be as they come to the process. That I am buying a partnership here, and it's a person that's committed. It's a school, it's an institution that's committed to holding hands with me and helping me raise my kid. I mean, that should be encouraging. Yeah. They see, they're just buying an education. Here's the tuition and fix my kid. You know, and they don't see this as somebody who's really holding hands with them and going through this process with them. It's a wonderful privilege. And as our society gets more troubled, you would think they're, especially single parents. You know, I think single parents are more likely to really see this. You know, we have Christian single parents now that love us for that reason. I mean, they don't have any idea what they would do without this school. They can't even imagine the future of their child without this school. And that's a privilege to be in that position. It's also scary. I mean, and for them, we must survive too. You know, that's why you as a board member, you know, why do you have to make the best decision for the school? I mean, you literally have parents who are desperate for the survival of this school. And with Satan as our enemy and living in a society that's totally against what we stand for, it's only by the grace of God that this school is going to be here tomorrow, much less a week from tomorrow, much less a year from tomorrow. And it takes sheer leadership from God himself. You know, I mean, God himself has to run this school, because it's not going to happen without him being the head of it. It's so dramatic that even we who sit and watch it every day, you're just breathless. You're breathless. It's just like somebody who's apparently healed from cancer, you know. You can't believe it's true, and so you don't even want the doctor to check on it, because you figure he's going to find it, you know, this time. I mean, it's the truth is too good to be real. I mean, we live with that every day, all the time. It's just amazing. It's really exciting. But these little battles, they're all individual battles. They're not won easily. There's a struggle. There's pain. And it's so much easier to just dismiss the kid. Sorry, you don't think we should spank your kid? He's expelled. He's out of here. Rather than going through the painful process of just explaining with the parent, putting the responsibility in their lap, watch them writhe, squirm with the pain, agonize with it, argue between husband and wife. Well, it was your idea in the first place. No, you're the one that said they couldn't do that. No, you said you're dead, or you know, it's going back and forth. You hear the muffled voices, you know, under the phone. And that whole process, you know, it just opened a bad wound. But it just had to happen. You know, it just had to happen.